This is our God and Country class, and of course we're going to talk about essentially our godly heritage, good economics, and how to run a country. But looking back at our Revolutionary War, it was very evident that God was involved in our Revolutionary War and even giving us this country. There were many, many times where the only explanation for something was a miracle from the Lord. And so they made it through the Revolutionary War, and we beat the British. And then we're in our Continental Congress now, and we're trying to put together a constitution, and they were just fighting, and they were just bickering, and they weren't getting anywhere. And old Ben Franklin, who people say is one of the least religious, well, by this time he's an older man than everyone else, and he's assumably got some more wisdom, and he stops, and I'm going to paraphrase, and he says, "Guys," he says, "how in the world is it that we made it all the way through the Revolutionary War? We prayed, we fasted, we saw God's hand in that war, and we gave him credit for winning. How is it that we're trying to put together this country?" He said, "groping as it were in the dark, how is it that we have not prayed yet?" So Ben Franklin called the Continental Congress to prayer. And they took a little break, came back together, and the rest is history. So with that being said, I would really like our host, James, to lead us in prayer, please. Let's really give our appreciation tonight to James and to Kayla for hosting us tonight. I really appreciate that. We've already had two. That's right, every time she's going to be, that's right. We've actually had two God and Country classes already, and they were absolutely wonderful. And I really praise God that we've got no seat empty. I can say that because the computer is in this chair. But I'm absolutely so thankful for every single one of you that are here. I really believe that what we're doing here tonight is the answer. So let's get into our God and Country class here. So I really want these next couple weeks here to seem like a movie preview. So when you go to the movies and you're sitting down in your seat and you think you're late, you're really not. Why? Because they've got movie previews. And so you got about 20, 30 minutes to watch all the different things that they want you to come back and pay for. And that's kind of like what this is, although it will be free. These two classes, this Monday night and the next Monday night, are like movie previews. In other words, this is what it would generally be like if we were to do this long term. So this will be an overview. If you see a movie preview, they don't give you the details. They give you the big picture shot. So you'll see a car chase scene. You'll see some explosions. You'll probably see someone kissed. You know what I mean? It'll just be the big picture. This is what kind of movie this is going to be. Same thing here. This is a movie preview, so to speak, for future God and Country classes, so that in a couple weeks we can say, how did we like that? Do we want to keep on going? What is our schedule going to be like, etc.? So this is your big picture movie preview, God and Country class. So what are we going to do in these classes? Learn about America's godly heritage, good economics, and the proper role of government. And the caption there at the bottom is, "Snacks, friends, and saving our country." So we've already got the snacks, we've got the friends, and now we're going to save our country.
Yes.
That's right. So thinking about God and country, is it necessary? Is it important? What's the big deal? In other words, why may it be a good idea for you to sacrifice a couple hours each week to talk about this sort of thing? Is it worth it? Well, what's going on in our country? We've got financial crises, high unemployment, rampant immorality, cultural chaos, intrusive government, corruption, deceit, widespread ignorance, rewriting of history, and pessimism. This is what's going on in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Anyone know what this is right here? Anyone been to this website before? Well, that's right. This is usdebtclock.org. And
it's not moving though.
Right. So this is a screenshot about 4 days ago. All right. So at that moment, at that second in time, this is what that clock looked like. If you were to go on it today and go on the internet, almost every single one of those numbers is moving rapidly. I mean, it's just zooming straight ahead 90 miles an hour. So this is basically one group's estimates of our country's financial situation with regards to our government and citizens. So this is a very interesting website to go to, but I'm just going to point out a couple things. Upper left right here is our U.S. national debt, or at least that's what it was about 4 days ago. Right now, it's much, much more, because like I say, every single second, it is zooming forward. Can anyone read that number right there? I know it's sort of small, but can anyone read that number? Go ahead and give it a shot.
$17 trillion. Yep. $634 billion.
Yeah.
$229,469,205.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We got some more guests, so we'll. I guess maybe I'll have to give up the chair. But anyway, so I don't even think they show the cents. You know, $205 or something cents, because I think it's a blur. I think that it doesn't even show up as a digit. So. At this moment in time, a few days ago, this was our national debt. This is our national debt, $17 trillion and counting. Debt per citizen, a couple days ago, if they divvied it all up, we all owe about $55,000.
Woman and child.
Man, woman, and child. That's right. So, Kayla, you thought you were saving up your money. You are $55,000 in debt. Debt per taxpayer, because you know there's less taxpayers than citizens. So per taxpayer, we all owe about $151,000. So you better get a good job, Kayla. You better get some good dance clients, all right? So go for the rich and famous ones, because that's what you owe, all right? Anyway, so all these numbers are moving. I want to point you to another number down here. It's cut off a little bit, but that is U.S. unfunded liabilities, okay? So, this number is what we owe right now. This is due. We owe someone that number. Down here are the things that we've promised people. For instance, Social Security, prescription drug liability, Medicare. So these are things that we've said at this point in time in the future, we will pay you this money. This is what we owe. This is what we will owe. You can't see that because it's cut off. But on my screen, that number is $118,810,889,446,153. Okay? That's the number that we will owe at some point. We've promised that number. And it's going up every second. So it is billions of dollars more today.
That one has to have a certain end time on it, right?
Well, I don't know. If you click on each of these, it'll tell you a little bit about their calculation of the number. It's usually data from the U.S. Treasury and other sources. But yeah, someone has put a lot of work into calculating all this. This is sort of a general overview for the anyone who wants to just look at it. Liability per taxpayer, $1 million roughly. So JB thought he was doing good, but he's got to work a little bit harder. So anyway, so this is moving every single second. At one point, I actually tried to calculate the dollars per hour that it goes up. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but I took the number at like 5 o'clock p.m. and then I waited an hour and took it again at 6 p.m. It was like billions of dollars more or something like that. Whatever it was, it is a staggering dollar per hour amount that goes up every single second.
No problem. We got a printing
press. Yeah, and that's right. We'll just print it on up. We got high unemployment. So we got individuals that went to college. They went into debt oftentimes, and then they get out and they've got to be a bartender. Or they got to go and wait tables at Shoney's, or whatever it is. There are people that have jobs, but they're way overqualified for the job they've got. Or maybe they're only working a certain number of hours, they would love to work more. So we've got high unemployment. Rampant immorality. It just seems like everywhere you go, like the walls are closing in on you. And like it's almost just like a compression chamber of people just pushing stuff on you that you would rather just not be a part of. Cultural chaos. This is a few months old, but this is California governor signing a landmark bill for transgender students. So basically, K-12, whatever gender that boy felt that day, that's the bathroom he can go into. Or that's the locker room he can go into. So you got a fifth-year-old boy, Tuesday, feels like a girl, that's where he's going. Going to the girls' locker room. I know that is many a boy's dream, but that's chaos, okay? And we had a governor of a state say, we're going to go ahead and try and do that in our state.
Moonbeam.
And I believe it's actually gone across the country for consideration at different times recently. So we've got cultural chaos. Intrusive government. So we could have picked from hundreds of thousands of examples. This is just one. Wyoming suing the EPA for stealing 1 million acres of state property. Corruption. We all know who that is. If you've been paying attention, that is the face of corruption. Look at her. She's not even sorry. Look at that chin. She is absolutely unrepentant. Lois Lerner, emails pointing to IRS officials' role in targeting conservative groups. This is the IRS, the group that we trust to take our money impartially. Then I said, if you like a health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. And they bought it. Widespread ignorance. Has anyone ever seen Jesse Waters, a portion of Bill O'Reilly's show, or Jimmy Kimmel? They'll send someone out on the streets of New York, and they'll just ask a random stranger a general question about America that every single human should know. Well, this is at a Miley Cyrus concert. We're not going to expect too much, but you know, he's walking around with pictures of the Vice President of the United States and John Kerry and different people, and they're asking these mostly young women, and they have no clue. One of them's like, well, doesn't he have a late night show or something like that? I mean, they thought that John Kerry was Jay Leno or something like that. I mean, they have no clue. Jesse Waters, he went to the beach on Memorial Day, and all these college students are off, and of course they're off because of Memorial Day. So he's walking up to him and asking him questions about our American military history, asking him questions like, well, why was the Cold War cold? And some girl will kind of cock her head, you know, and she'll think and she'll say, because it's cold in Russia, you know, or they'll say, well, who bombed us? Who bombed Pearl Harbor at the beginning of America's involvement in World War II? And they'll kind of think and they'll say, Russia? I mean, they just have no clue. I mean, they just, you know, I think one question was, which side was Abraham Lincoln on? And they thought it was the South. I mean, they just have no clue. They just absolutely have no clue about our history. And these are the leaders of tomorrow. Rewriting of history. This is a picture of Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. So this guy basically is telling people the kind of history where America is the bad guy. And America, we abused these people, and we misused these resources, and we stole land from these people, and we're just awful. And this is a popular book among young people. They think this guy is telling the truth about history. So if people do know anything about history, they normally know the wrong thing. So they're either ignorant or they're misled. Pessimism. AP poll, most Americans pessimistic about the future. Recently it was asked, do you believe that your children will have a better future than you? You know, the American dream. Leave the next generation a better America than you had it? And they said, no, we don't think so. We think that our kids will have it worse. This is America.
They already do have it worse.
They do have it worse, that's right. Well, just even earlier, James was saying that he gets upset when he thinks that his girls will not get to know the America he knew. So what's going on in the world? Wars, militant Islamists, oppression, invasions, nuclear threats, financial instability. I know it's getting sad, but it's going to get better, I promise. We've got Hamas firing rockets into Israel. Israel firing rockets into the Gaza Strip. This has been going on for a while now. They've been fighting for thousands of years, and they're at it today. We've got militant Islamists marching across Iraq, almost completely unchecked. These people are the embodiment of evil. And they are taking over Iraq, the place where many of our sons and daughters and dads lost their lives, lost their limbs. They sweat. They left their blood over there. And these guys are just marching across. Oppression. This is an article of an individual that defected from North Korea, and he sketched his impression of North Korean prison camps. These are individuals who are undergoing pigeon torture, where you tie the individual's hands behind their back and you let them hang there. Presumably their arms come out of their sockets. Some of the other images were really not appropriate to show, but North Korea, just a whole country of oppressed, brainwashed people. Invasions. Putin just took Crimea. He just took it. And he's looking at Ukraine, thinking that looks pretty good too. We've got Iran. Now, their people may be some nice people, but their leaders, they've got some crazy leaders. You know what they call us? The Great Satan. They call Israel the Little Satan. And, you know, they're building nukes, and we're trying to negotiate with them, ask them to just slow down their nuclear program. Financial instability, this is a few years ago, or a couple years ago, but Europe's financial situation is even worse than ours. And the government was just talking about austerity, just considering cutting back some of the entitlements and some of the government programs, and they had to bring out the riot police. Because the people were rioting in the streets because you're going to take away some of my stuff. Some of the stuff that I get. And so they had to bring out the riot police. So the world is a mess. Our country is spiraling towards destruction. What happened? We got away from God and we forgot how to run a country. Now some of us, maybe the older generation, you knew how to run a country. You didn't get away from God, but the country did. And maybe we thought, well, someone's taking care of it. Someone's on the job. You know, someone's got to be solving these problems. Because you saw it happen and you said, that's crazy. But no one was on the job. And now here we are. And so we're thinking, maybe it's got to be us. Maybe we've got to be the ones on the job. The answer, in my opinion, is to learn, vote, and serve. Now you may be saying, well, Adam, what about God? Well, God hasn't gone anywhere. God hasn't changed. God didn't get liberal. Something happened with us. In other words, we did something different. So God is the answer. He's part of the answer, but he hasn't done anything different. We've done something different. We've got to change. So what I want is to add learning, voting, and serving to your relationship with God, to the God answer, add learning, voting, and serving. We need to learn about America's godly heritage, good economics, and the proper role of government. Then we need to vote according to those principles. And then we need to serve at all levels of government according to our ability, our time, serve. In these God and country classes, that's what we're going to do. We're going to learn about America's godly heritage, good economics, and the proper role of government. We will then be able to learn and better be equipped to fulfill the last two, vote and serve. So first we learn, then we vote and serve according to what we learned. So here's a sneak preview. The kind of things we'll be talking about in class. I know we all need to pick me up after that last 10 minutes. This portion is called, Did You Know? Did you know? No. That the first thing Christopher Columbus did when he got to the New World was pray. And thank God for the journey. Thank God for bringing him here. He prayed. Did you know that the Pilgrims escaped England and came to America in order to live out their lives according to the Bible? You may have known that. But essentially, it was illegal to follow the Bible in England. You had to be part of the Anglican Church. You had to do whatever the king said. And they wanted to follow God instead. That's what they came here for. Did you know that the Declaration of Independence was influenced by sermons? By preaching of the day? This is very, very cool. Can anyone see what this is? What is on that picture there?
Swimming Romans.
What is it?
Swimming Romans.
Swimming Romans, well.
Egyptians, I guess.
Well, yeah, Egyptians, right. Who can describe what we're seeing here? Well, what scene is this?
Red Sea. Catching up with the Egyptians.
That's right. So who's that right there?
Moses.
Yeah. Who's that back there?
Children.
Well, and the nation of Israel. Yeah. Yeah. Got the Egyptians there. What's that up there? Yeah. Cloud. By day and a pillar of fire by night. This is the Exodus. On July 4th, 1776, We had just decided we're going to officially break away from England. And they said, we need a seal. We need an emblem to declare to the world what we're about. So they asked a few guys if they would mock up some drafts. And Ben Franklin was one of them. And this is what he came up with. His draft, his proposal for the Great Seal of America, was Moses leading the people out of Egypt, out of bondage. Exodus, that's what he wanted people to think about when they thought about America. A Bible story. Can anyone read the motto around the seal? What does that say?
Rebellion of crowns, obedience to God.
Can you say that again?
It said rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God.
Yeah, that's awesome. Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. That is awesome. That's what he thought America was about. Ben Franklin, one of our founders. He said, when you think about America, think about the nation of Israel being led out of oppression. That's our country. Did you know that the government, both federal and state, has proclaimed many national days of fasting, humiliation, and prayer throughout our country's history? These are government proclamations. This one is from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It says, by the governor, a proclamation for a day of public fasting, humiliation, and prayer. Humiliation would be to humble yourself, of course.
Do you know how long ago it's been since we had one of those?
I don't know. But this used to be a regular occurrence. Was when we had something going on in the country, whether it be the Revolutionary War. Even FDR led the country during World War II in a prayer. This one was done by Samuel Adams. This is our founding. And they say you can't pray at a football game. They say you can't bring a Bible into school. Teachers are telling kids, you can't say God here. But this is it. This is our government. This is a document of the government. And they're saying, you people here, the inhabitants of Massachusetts, pray, fast, and humble yourself. Take that to school with you. Did you know church services were held in the House of Representatives chambers in the nation's capital from 1800 to 1857? So this is actually where the House of Representatives would do business Monday through Friday. On Sunday morning, they would get out all of the implements of the office, all of the desks and all that stuff, and they would have a church service. This is the rotunda. This is Statuary Hall now. They had church services there. Do you know who went to those church services? Any guess?
People who worked there during the week.
People who worked there during the week. Congressmen and Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, that great atheist, or whatever you'd call him, Thomas Jefferson went to church services in our nation's capital. And he's allegedly the one that wants a separation of church and state. How do you reconcile that? This is very cool. During World Wars I and II, soldiers were given heart shield Bibles. These are little pocket Bibles about the size of what we would know a Gideon to be now, a little Gideon Bible. And right here, this is a metal covering, sometimes gold plated. And it would go on the front cover of the Bible, and they would put it in their left front pocket. And it says on the cover there, may this keep you safe from harm. It's a Bible. They called it heart shield Bibles. This right here is a depiction of the church pennant above the American flag. It says, this pennant is the only flag to ever be hoisted above the American flag. It is displayed only during divine services. I don't know if you can read what that is on the right-hand side. That says, the White House, Washington. To the armed forces, as Commander-in-Chief, it is my pleasure in commending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces of the United States. Throughout the centuries, men of many faiths and diverse origins have found in the sacred book words of wisdom, counsel, and inspiration. It is a fountain of strength, and now, as always, an aid in attaining the highest aspirations of the human soul. Sincerely yours, actually, very sincerely yours, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So the President of the United States was encouraging soldiers in the armed forces to read the Bible. And this little Bible here, this little Bible was made January 25th, 1941. And this is what they gave our soldiers. Show me the separation of church and state. Did you know preachers were so instrumental to the American Revolution that the British gave them a military name? They called them the Black Robed Regiment. A regiment is a military term. The preachers during that time were so instrumental in encouraging people to be independent from England, telling them about their individual rights, their God-given rights, that the British called them the Black Robed Regiment, said, you've got to take out these folks right here, because these people are really the ones fueling this revolution. A Black Robed Regiment. Right there, that is a picture of John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg. He was a pastor of two little churches in Woodstock, Virginia. And this was at the beginning of the Revolutionary War. And he was preaching one Sunday. Of course, he's wearing his black robe. And he's there in his congregation, up there, the pulpit. And he's speaking from the book of Ecclesiastes. There's a time for this and a time for that. Time for war, there's a time for peace. He says, we are not in a time of peace. He says, we are in a time of war. He says, if you don't fight for your liberties now, you will have no liberties left to fight for. And then he begins taking off his robe, and underneath his robe is the full military dress of an officer in the Continental Army. He was also a state legislator at the time. But at this moment, he was representing the armed forces. He was an officer. And he walked out the front of that church. He called on some drummers to start drumming. And he called them out. He said, join me. And that day, roughly 300 of his congregants joined him in front of that church. They became known as the 8th Virginia Regiment. Pastor, a preacher. Today, there is a nationwide movement of black-robed regiment pastors who want to do the same thing, who want to lead their people in righteousness from the pulpit, but also in the public square. This is a few years ago. This is a rally for honor, I believe, Restoring Honor, a Glenn Beck program. But this is the Jefferson Memorial. Up there on stage is a representation of the Black Robe Regiment. These were clergy members from all over the country, and they were invited to come up there and be a symbol of the modern black-robed regiment. It's happening right now. This is just a few years ago, but it's still going on. Did you know that pastors are leading their churches and voting according to their Christian values and not the color of their skin? This is a pastor in the south side of Chicago, a church of roughly 15,000. This individual, James Meeks, he's encouraging his church members to back the GOP candidate because he better represents their Christian values than the Democrat candidate. It's happening. This is a pastor in Thousand Oaks, California. Yep, California. And they need it. Pastor Rob McCoy of Calvary Chapel decided he was going to run for the state assembly. Now they asked him, they said, well, now when you started preaching sermons like this and when you told your church that you were going to run for office, did they get all upset and did they leave and did they storm out and protest? He said, no, we got more people. This is happening. Pastors across the country are affirming their freedom to preach about the issues from the pulpit. In fact, there's a group called Alliance Defending Freedom, and they are organizing preachers and pastors that on a certain day of the year, that they preach a sermon that they consider over the line, that maybe they think they're not supposed to preach, and they actually record the transcripts of these sermons and send it to the IRS. Because they know constitutionally a church should be able to say whatever it wants to. We have the First Amendment right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and also a church is a special entity that needs to be able to speak out against the evils of the day. The founders knew that the power to tax was the power to control, and they did not want any kind of state control over the church. That's Jefferson's separation. Churches, in fact, have more freedom than any other nonprofit group. Did you know that a church does not even need to apply for a 501c3 status? They don't need to. A church is an entity that is nonprofit by its definition. If a group of people, if they pray, if they have worship services, if there's preaching, if they have bulletins or whatever it is that looks like a church, they are a nonprofit entity. By definition, they're special. Our founders set it up that way. They wanted a church to be free to do whatever they needed to do to keep our country right. All across the country, Americans are restoring their country to its founding principles. This is the 9/12 rally, the Tea Party rally a few years ago. I was there somewhere. And some people say the Tea Party's dead. They say it's gone. It's not gone. We just have jobs. We just have somewhere to go Monday morning. We can't hang out in the streets of protest, but it's still going on. We're still doing it. We're still trying to take back our country. We're still trying to restore it to its founding principles. We can be a part of that, and we should. It matters for us and our posterity. Kayla, could you please read what that little girl is written on her sign?
I am 6 years old. I am $30 in debt. $30,000 in debt, and all I own is a bike.
So this is a couple years old, I guess, right? Because now we're at $55,000. Little girl. The baby inside Tamara's womb is going to come out open $55,000.
Stand up.
Better get up quick.
Better hurry up. We need to get to work. We need to do this. I'm 6 years old. I'm $30,000 in debt, and all I own is this bike. So we need to do this for us, but also for our children and our grandchildren, so that the people who come after us will have a better country than we had, or at least as good as we've had it.
I was just going to say, Adam, I think that's the number one thing that bugs me right there, is that people are so about themselves that they cannot think about her and that little one there coming.
That's right.
Bugs me.
That's right. Or there's the other side of it where maybe someone just says, well, I'm tough, I can handle it. You know, I can handle going through hard times, but what about your kids? You know, or what about your wife? What about your grandkids? You can maybe handle persecution, or you can handle, you know, rampant inflation or unemployment. You can deal with it maybe, but do you want your kids to go through it?
But it's the mindset of people that I just want it all for me right now. Who cares about?
Right.
We don't know the hard times that we get ahead of us.
That's right. That's right.
You might think you can handle it.
You don't want to go through it.
No.
That's right. And if we go through this class, if we decide we're going to commit to it for a little bit longer term, we'll talk about some hard times we've been through already as a country, and that we made it out on the other side. So we should be a part of this for ourselves, but also for our posterity. Edmund Burke, a British during the Revolutionary War, but he supported the American independence. He said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." We can do it. Romans 8, 31 and 37. If God is for us, who can be against us? In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. We can do it. You know, the liberals, the left, they've been doing it since about the 60s. And they've organized, and they've marched, and they've rallied. And at some point they said, well, this may be more effective if we're on the inside rather than the outside. So they've been doing it. They've taken over the universities. They've taken over the public school system. They've made it to Congress. They've made it to the White House. They've infiltrated. And here's the thing. They're winning the argument, but they're wrong. Can you imagine someone winning the argument and yet being the opposite of correct. In fact, they're nuts. In fact, their policies, their ideas bring destruction. And it's evident. And yet they've been winning the argument. And the assumption is they don't have this on their side. They don't have God on their side. We do. And we're right. And our policies, our ideas actually bring prosperity. So if they can win for these last 50 years and be wrong, imagine what we can do with the Lord and when we're right.
They are entrenched, though.
They are entrenched.
It'll take a lot to move them out.
It will. It will. It'll take all of us. It'll take an absolutely concerted effort. But we can do it. We need to learn, vote, and serve.